Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. In a farewell address delivered in Chicago late Tuesday before throngs of supporters, President Barack Obama defended his 8-year record in office. He called on Americans to remain vigilant against external aggression and guard against a weakening of the values that made American people who they are.
In 10 days, the world will witness a hallmark of our democracy, the peaceful transfer of power from one freely elected president to the next.
Mr. Obama said his 8 years ended recession, opened up relations with Cuba, shuttered Iran's nuclear program, took out terror mastermind Osama bin Laden, won marriage equality, and secured health insurance for all.
For all the real progress that we've made, we know it's not enough. Our economy doesn't work as well or grow as fast when a few prosper at the expense of a growing middle class and ladders for folks who want to get into the middle class. That's the economic argument, but stark inequality is also corrosive to our democratic idea.
University of Virginia political scientist Larry Sabato said despite his achievements, Mr. Obama leaves as the country remains polarized.
President Obama has achieved a fair amount, but it's also true that we're more divided than ever. Now, part of that is directly tied to the outcome of this election.
Mr. Obama has less than 2 weeks left in office before his successor, Donald Trump, takes over as the 45th president. Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has named former Prime Minister Daniel Kablan Duncan as the country's vice president, a new post created under a new constitution. Duncan resigned Monday and will be replaced by Amadou Gon Coulibaly, a member of the ruling party and Ouattara's senior advisor. This is VOA News. The Cable News Network reports classified documents it received and presented last week to President-elect Trump included allegations Russian operatives claim to have compromised information about him. CNN said federal agents are investigating the credibility and accuracy of the allegations. Meanwhile, U.S. lawmakers, including Maryland Senator Ben Cardin, are moving forward with a measure to increase sanctions against Russia for its alleged interference in last year's U.S. election.
We have been attacked by Russia. That is no longer subject to any debate. The January 6th report from the intelligence community assessment makes it clear that that attack was directed by Mr. Putin, that it was aimed at the undermining the credibility of our free election system, and it was meant to damage one of the candidates.
The bill would impose visa bans and freeze assets of those who undermine the cybersecurity of democratic institutions, possibly making it more difficult for banks to conduct business with Russian military and intelligence agencies. Afghan officials say a twin suicide bombing in the capital, Kabul, Tuesday killed more than 30, wounded dozens near the parliament building. At least 14 others killed, dozens more wounded, in separate incidents in the southern provinces of Helmand and Kandahar. Iceland's center-right Independence, Reform, and Bright Future parties agreed Tuesday to form a coalition government. The announcement came 2 months after snap elections. Bjarni Benediktsson, leader of the Independence Party, will become the next prime minister.
The priorities of this government are to strengthen the infrastructures of Iceland, be it healthcare or communication, the educational systems, but at the same time to maintain the economic strength of Iceland. We've come a long way since the crisis, and we are enjoying now very robust growth.
The coalition said it will give Parliament a vote on whether to hold a referendum on restarting talks on joining the European Union. A U.S. federal jury Tuesday sentenced to death the killer of 9 people in a historically black South Carolina church. 22-year-old Dylan Roof, a self-proclaimed white supremacist, was found guilty of 33 federal charges related to the massacre of worshipers in 2015 at the Emmanuel AME Church in the city of Charleston. Former Congolese opposition leader Okombe Salisa, who lost last year's election to longtime President Denis Sassou Nguesso, was arrested Tuesday for arms possession after months in hiding. It followed the arrest in June of another opposition candidate charged with illegal possession of arms and ammunition. The leaders of the Greek and Turkish Cypriot communities returned to the negotiating table in Geneva Tuesday on power-sharing issues and a potentially historic bid to end decades of division on the Mediterranean island. Government spokesmen said the two sides are within reach of agreement. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 11th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. President Barack Obama has given his final address to the American people.
Michelle and I have been so touched by all the well wishes that we've received over the past few weeks. But tonight it's my turn to say thanks.
Mr. Obama spoke Tuesday night in his adopted hometown of Chicago. A new Ivorian government is expected to be announced today, Wednesday, following Tuesday's appointment of a new prime minister. The new UN Secretary General commits himself to diplomacy for peace. And Gambia Supreme Court postpones hearing President Jammeh's election challenge until May.
There's a rule of law. Everybody is entitled to a fair hearing. Our opinion is that we have a substantive issue in court, and it ought to be heard according to the rights of the petitioner, according to law and the Constitution.
Edward Gomez is the lawyer for Gambian President Yahya Jammeh. Namibian indigenous leaders filed a lawsuit in U.S. courts to settle a century-old genocide allegations. And South Sudan aims for standards control of its imports. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama has given his final speech to the American people, speaking in his adopted hometown of Chicago before thousands who chanted four more years. Obama said he wanted to say thanks for the conversations with the people who, he said, kept him honest and inspired.
Michelle and I have been so touched by all the well wishes that we've received over the past few weeks. But Tonight it's my turn to say thanks. Whether we have seen eye to eye or rarely agreed at all, my conversations with you, the American people, in living rooms and in schools, at farms, on factory floors, at diners, and on distant military outposts, those conversations are what have kept me honest and kept me inspired and kept me going. And every day I have learned from you. You made me a better president, and you made me a better man.
Mr. Obama reminded his audience that the country's founding creed is to embrace all and not just some.
In 10 days, the world will witness a hallmark of our democracy. No. The peaceful transfer of power from one freely elected president to the next. I committed to President-elect Trump that my administration would ensure the smoothest possible transition, just as President Bush did for me. Because it's up to all of us to make sure our government can help us meet the many challenges we still face. We have what we need to do so. We have everything we need to meet those challenges. After all, we remain the wealthiest, most powerful, and most respected nation on earth. Our youth, our drive, our diversity and openness, our boundless capacity for risk and reinvention means that the future should be ours. But that potential will only be realized if our democracy works. Only if our politics better reflects the decency of our people. Only if all of us, regardless of party affiliation or particular interests, help restore the sense of common purpose that we so badly need right now. To begin with, our democracy won't work without a sense that everyone has economic opportunity. And the good news is that today the economy is growing again, Wages, incomes, home values, and retirement accounts are all rising again. Poverty is falling again. The wealthy are paying a fair share of taxes, even as the stock market shatters records. The unemployment rate is near a 10-year low. The uninsured rate has never, ever been lower. Healthcare costs are rising at the slowest rate in 50 years. And I've said, and I mean it, if anyone can put together a plan that is demonstrably better than the improvements we've made to our healthcare system that covers as many people at less cost, I will publicly support it. Because that, after all, is why we serve. Not to score points or take credit, but to make people's lives better. But for all the real progress that we've made, we know it's not enough.
Mr. Obama called America a better, stronger place than when he started. Gambia's Nigerian-born Chief Justice Emmanuel Fagbenle has urged President Yahya Jammeh to embrace offer by ECOWAS to peacefully bring to an end the political quagmire in his country. As Sini M.K. Marina reports from neighboring Senegal, the Supreme Court said Tuesday it cannot rule on President Jammeh's challenge against his electoral defeat until May, casting further doubt on whether a peaceful political transition will happen next week.
The Gambia Supreme Court on Tuesday was unable to hear Mr. Jammeh's petition to have the election result nullified, hold fresh election, or declare him the winner. The five Nigerian and one Sierra Leonean foreign judges due to hear the case were no show in Banjul. According to the Chief Justice, parties should consider alternative resolution of political conflict through ECOWAS or the Committee of Political Parties. Gambia should not be a place where peace cannot be found. All men of goodwill, all peace-loving and God-fearing should assist the Gambia at the time of need. He adjourned the hearing to 16 January and warned the petition will be fully heard in May or November. But the lawyer for President Jammeh, Edward Gomez, felt disappointed with the Chief Justice statement and told reporters after the Supreme Court sitting in Banjul.
Well, we try to resolve the matter among ourselves by alternative dispute resolution if it's possible and by the application of reason and common sense and bearing in mind the peaceful nature of our country and also the goodwill we have for one another.
Motions we are going to file for substituted service for the other parties to be served.
My reaction is to wait until we have a full panel to legitimize anything that is done in court. Opinion is that since there is a pending issue, it ought to be heard. But there is a rule of law that everybody is entitled to a fair hearing. Well, everybody is entitled to their opinion. But our opinion is that we have a substantive issue in court and it ought to be heard according to the rights of the petitioner, according to law and the Constitution. Wait until the due process of law takes place. That's what I'm saying. The status quo remains.
President Yahya Jammeh has until January 18 to hand over power to President-elect Adama Barrow. West African leaders will be in Banjul on Friday to prevail over Mr. Jammeh to step down. ECOWAS is on a last diplomatic effort to secure a peaceful end to the political crisis sparked by President Jammeh's refusal to relinquish power. Regional bloc has already put a standby force on hold, but may be forced to deploy if Jammeh continues to cling to power when his mandate expires. Meanwhile, Gambian activists, Amnesty International Senegal, and Friends of Gambia have renewed their call for President Jammeh to step down at a news conference in Dakar on Tuesday. They also lambast Senegalese lawmaker and lawyer El Hadj Diouf, who is accused of defending the actions of outgoing President Yahya Jammeh, describing him as a traitor. Fatoumata Sandeng is the daughter of Gambian opposition leader killed during protests in Banjul earlier this year and now lives in exile with her family.
the people have decided. It's enough. You can't kill us anymore. So let him just pack and go. All he is doing is just pointless and irrelevant. You can't oppress people for 22 years and feel that we would not wake up. Even for the longest time of sleep, somebody wakes up.
Prominent Senegalese rap activist and member of powerful pro-democracy movement Yann Amar also added his voice for Jammeh to step down. Nyan Jai is also a Gambian living in Dakar who flee after threats on his life, described the situation as precarious.
The situation in Gambia is very precarious right now, but we're hoping that what's happening and Jammeh's position currently will not and is not tenable. Therefore, we are hoping that the voice of reason will prevail and Jammeh will get to understand that the people have spoken and that power lies with the people, and the people have made a decision, and that decision is final and irreversible. The will of the people will be entrenched, come what may.
For Daybreak Africa, I am Sini M.K. Malena reporting from Dakar.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Then please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. A new Ivorian government is expected to be announced today, Wednesday, following Tuesday's appointment of a new prime minister. President Alassane Ouattara on Tuesday named Amadou Gon Coulibaly a key member of Mr. Ouattara's ruling RDR party. Coulibaly replaces former prime minister Daniel Kablan Duncan, who was then named vice president, a post created by Ivory Coast new constitution. Jean Gervais Tchéide is vice president in charge of finance and budget for the opposition Ivorian Popular Front Party of former president Laurent Gbagbo.
Mr. Coulibaly Amadou Gon was secretary general of the president, and he is a high official of the ruling party, the RDR, Mr. Alassane Ouattara. So for me, there is no surprise, because the two parties who are sharing the power, that is FDR and BDCI, decided to share the power, as I said, one being president, the other one being vice president, and of course the government belonging to the party who has the majority in the alliance. So I have nothing to say about it. Anyway, if our party, the party of Mr. Laurent Gbagbo, has something to say, you will have the official statement tomorrow or the tomorrow, just after the new government has been issued. But as I have no personal analysis concerning this, we are just waiting to see what they are going to do. If Mr. Amadou Gon will continue this policy of no democracy, of sending the political opponents to prison, keeping them in prison without any judgment for 4, 5, 6 years. We are watching them to see whether they are going to continue that policy.
So what do you make of President Ouattara naming his former prime minister, Kablan Duncan, as his vice president? He described him as a person with great experience and who is a servant of the state.
Now, my problem is not with the person of Mr. Duncan himself. My problem is about the way the vice president has been appointed by a person, an individual, because the new constitution, which we were opposed to, it is said that the vice president, just like in the USA, must be elected at the same time on the same ticket as the president in the election. So why did Mr. Alassane wait until he was elected himself? Now, do you see a man becoming president of the country without being elected by the population? This is not democratic. This is what we were against, and this is what we were opposing to during the referendum of the constitution. But for Mr. Duncan himself, I know him. He used to be the prime minister when myself I was beginning in the Ministry of Finance. He is a very hard worker. He is a very good man. He has the capacity of ruling a ministry, even the country. For that, I have no problem. He is a good man. He has this ability. There's no problem on that. My problem is that it is not democratic for Mr. Alassane to choose one person among the population of Côte d'Ivoire to say, you are going to be the next president. If I happen to fall sick or if I happen to die, you will be the president. We are not in a kingdom.
Jean Gervais Tchéide is the vice president in charge of finance and budget for the opposition Ivorian Popular Front Party of former president Laurent Gbagbo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abidjan. New UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who has said conflict prevention will be his top priority, laid out his vision on Tuesday for retuning the organization's work from largely responding to conflicts back to preventing them. From the United Nations viewers, Margaret Bashir has more.
Guterres took office on January 1st and has wasted no time in calling on nations to commit to a surge in diplomacy for peace. He has urged a new approach and focus on preventing conflicts that starts with addressing root causes of crises and includes reforming how the UN makes decisions.
Prevention must consistently be seen as a value in itself, and it is an essential means of reducing human suffering and enabling people to reach their full potential.
Guterres, a former Portuguese prime minister, told a packed meeting of the UN Security Council that war is never inevitable. He said it is a matter of choice to exclude, discriminate, and resort to violence.
But peace, too, is never inevitable. It is the result of difficult decisions, hard work, and compromise. We should never take it for granted, but should prize and nurture it in every country at every time. Prevention is not merely a priority, but the priority.
The United Nations is facing an abundance of conflicts around the globe, and the number of displaced persons is the highest it has been since World War II. The organization is stretched to the limit financially, and it has more than 100,000 peacekeepers deployed to stabilize some of the most complex situations. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
A new lawsuit in a U.S. court is reawakening a century-old mass slaughter of Namibia's Herero and Namba peoples by German colonial forces, an event that has been described as the 20th century's first genocide. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
When Vukile Rekoro was a boy in what is now Namibia, his family would gather around a fire and tell stories. They were stories of horror and humiliation, of unarmed women and children killed by German soldiers, of terrified families driven into the searing desert to die of thirst, and of concentration camps, whose gruesome indignities would be repeated on new victims in Germany and Poland decades later.
Untold suffering, misery, and brutalities. When we sat around the bonfire at night, this is where the oral history would be passed on from generation to generation. And that's when it came to know about, what happened to our ancestors.
Rekoro is 62 and the elected paramount chief of the Herero people, who number about 400,000. Between 1904 and 1908, tens of thousands of indigenous Herero and Nama people were killed by German troops after they revolted against colonial rule. More than a century later, Rekoro is leading a charge to sue the German government in U.S. District Court in New York, seeking an apology and group reparations. Germany has not issued a formal apology for this dark episode, but the issue has been discussed between the two governments for at least a decade, with no resolution. Rekoro says if Germany does not allow Nama and Herero representatives to participate in talks, there will be consequences. He threatened a public relations and diplomatic offensive, and says his group will lobby to have Germany labeled a war criminal and a pariah state.
We are not going to sit here 100 years for another 120 years and allow an imperialist type of situation to continue to deprive us as Africans of our rights. No, no, no.
Germany's position on the apology and negotiations remains unclear. The German Foreign Ministry did not immediately respond to VOA's request for comment. But 2 years ago, the Foreign Minister said, "We think the time has come to intensify and formalize this exchange between the governments of our two countries." That has not happened, says German human rights activist Christian Kopp, who says Germany should apologize and offer reparations, but he feels many Germans do not agree.
I think Germany would be divided. Some, and I wouldn't say it's the majority, maybe 50%, maybe even less, who would feel better after this. And there are others, and there are many, many people who say, well, why is it always the Germans who have to ask for forgiveness? So there will be many Germans who will not be happy about this.
Rekoro's lawyer, New York-based Ken McCallion, says the damages cannot be understated.
They went from being a very successful
and relatively prosperous indigenous people to really grind in poverty, and that stain has really continued to today. In addition to that, there were cultural losses. In eradicating the people, the German authorities really were also seeking to eradicate their history and culture.
Rucoro stressed that he is not seeking individual payouts for all living descendants. Instead, he wants reparations that benefit the entire community. And, he says, he feels a deep responsibility to keep agitating. Anita Pell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The South Sudan government has contracted a private company, Baltic Control, to test the quality of its imports and exports. Ministry of Commerce officials on Tuesday signed a deal with Baltic Control, which is an internationally recognized surveying and inspection company. It's the first time that South Sudan's imports and exports will be tested. Some South Sudanese welcomed the move, saying it will protect consumers from poor quality or expired imported products. Tito Justin reports from Juba.
Although South Sudan set up a National Food and Drug Authority as well as a National Bureau of Standards after declaring independence in 2011, the government has been unable to control imports largely because it lacks facilities to satisfy the quality of consumable goods. Civil society activists and consumers worry that tons of expired food commodities and fake drugs have made their way into the country over the past several years. Juba resident Salah Agri says there is no question that some of the goods imported into South Sudan are of poor quality.
You find that most of these goods that are expired from their country of origin, they just send it to us here. They look at us as a dumping ground that they can bring any bad thing. When you look at the drinks, most of the drinks, you find even the gas, it's not there. You just drink it because you want to take like soda, beer and so forth.
Agri says the government must ensure that it checks the quality of goods imported into South Sudan directly from the port of entry so that South Sudanese have peace of mind that they are consuming quality products. Mahjib Adam is a trader in Juba and imports his items from neighboring Uganda. He acknowledges that sometimes the items he imports are expired.
Now there's 2017, so that's a lot of things is going to be finished on 2016, but now it's 2017, so there's still coming.
Last year, authorities in Awil town seized and burned large quantities of spoiled food items in the market. The South Sudan Bureau of Standards and the Ministry of Trade, Industry and Investment contracted with the Baltic Control Company Limited. Kawaja Zuber is chairman of Baltic Control Company in Africa and Asia. He says the new initiative will facilitate trade in various sector. Zuber says his workers will check all international shipped cargo or trucks coming to South Sudan and will issue certificate of conformity to ensure that the products are safe.
If the consignment has already arrived and if it is not according to the requirements which you have paid for, then you are stuck with it. So this program will benefit the traders that whatever they have paid for, the quality is actually coming like that.
Stephen Doctor, the Undersecretary in the Trade, Industry and Investment Ministry, who also serves as the South Sudan Director for External Trade, says the government contracted with Baltic because it wants to ensure that its imports are safe.
That was Tito Justin reporting from Juba, and that's it for this Wednesday, January 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very nice day.
Hi, my name is Florence Mwale, and I work as a reporter at Capital FM here in Malawi. With the world now a global village, the VOA's place cannot be overemphasized since most of the issues it airs are pertinent to the advancement of least developed countries such as Malawi. All of us here at Cable Radio Malawi are thrilled to be associated with the VOA as a partner station. Some of VOA's programs on our schedule include Straight Talk Africa and Daybreak Africa. As Cable Radio Malawi, we are excited to be associated with the VOA. Just last month, a member of our news team managed to have a one-on-one interview with the VOA's James Butty at the height of the protests that followed the US elections. And now, as the VOA celebrates its 75th anniversary, we look forward to more live radio interactions and strengthened relations. Happy 75th anniversary, Voice of America, from Capital Radio, Malawi.